And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Really?
Yep. That's me.
All day?
All day and half the night.
Twice on Sunday?
Yeah. Hey, our sponsor this wonderful Sunday afternoon is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Right now you can get some great deals on some John Deere tractors up there. Go up and see them. They've also got the Honda generator line and the Steel Power Products line. So they've got it all going on up there. Give them a call. 226-9226, or you can get them on the web. Did I give the address? 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Nice.
Yeah. So what's going on today?
Oh, today? Well, we had so much fun talking about home defense last week. And we in the studio, all four of us, we decided we wanted to know more. We needed more information. So kind of felt like we spent a couple hours with Mr. Friedman, and then, bam, it was over, and it's like, oh, barely got through anything. So he was kind enough to take another chunk out of his Sunday.
Take another swipe at it, huh?
I was going to make another run at it since, you know, I'm sure you've heard enough shows about the election and, you know, all that. And
isn't there a virus going on, too,
and then,
or something?
Oh, stupid virus.
A pandemic.
So we have stupid virus, and we have masks, and we have, you know, all that other unpleasantness. But, you know, the funny thing is, since we're all in our homes right now, it would make sense to zoom in and get some focus on home defense, you know? Kind of makes good sense. A lot of us were out all the time, and we don't spend a lot of time in our houses, but now we do. So it's a good time to take a look at what you have going on. I ordered myself some red nightlights.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're going to have red nightlights here
soon. Oh, boy.
So those are en route, and hopefully he'll kind of go through a couple of those really just easy fixes for your home security, things that you can do yourself. So our guest is Mr. Peter Friedman. We've done a bunch of shows with him over the years, and he is really an expert on Islam and the Quran. So if you look on wethepeopleradio.us, you will see a tab up top that is marked Islam. A lot of those shows are his. He also gave us a really hot lead on an amazing book on that same topic, and that is under our suggested items. And the book is called It's All About Muhammad. And it's basically the biography of Muhammad. Very interesting.
Great
so
read.
For those of you who don't want to read the Quran and don't want to become an expert on that, you might want to just become an expert on Muhammad, because once you know about that, really, really illuminating. And I guarantee you, you don't know the story. You will read it and just be blown away. So that is worth looking into. So for the purposes of this program, Mr. Friedman's been instructing firearms for over 50 years. His expertise is mainly in handguns. All calibers. He's an NRA Life member. He's been an NRA member for 45 years, also a founding member of Oath Keepers. And he's a U.S. Navy small arms instructor, reserve deputy sheriff, reserve deputy sheriff pilot. He is in the sheriff's posse in Contra Costa County. He's an instructor for the community emergency response team. And he's worked, I don't know, he's with the FAA for like a zillion years. He's been a pilot for a really long time. We've done some really fun shows on the FBI with him. So I would encourage you, if you've got a little time on your hands, as I think a lot of folks do because we're trapped inside, you might look down through some of the shows. I think they're really, what was the funny one about my time in the FBI? that was we did that February of 2018. I cannot believe it was that long ago, but that was a funny show.
That was a good show.
Everybody still talks about that, the gun that fell in the toilet. And just to be clear about it, that was the FBI's gun, not Peter Friedman's gun. But he did live long enough to mock them about that. So anyway, it's just fun for everyone. So I don't know where we're starting today, so I'll kick it over to you. How's life in the Friedman household today?
Well, it's pretty good so far. Nothing untoward has occurred, but, you know, the day is young.
It's still time.
Plenty of time.
Plenty of time. Who knows what's going to happen? I thought what I would do today, since I, you know, have been doing these in-home courses on home defense and everything, I am fascinated by the fact in as recently as 2 days ago when I did it in somebody's home, how ignorant people are in the state of California regarding firearm laws. And they either overestimate things or they underestimate things. So I thought maybe it would be really good today if we went through some sections of the penal code so that people were aware of exactly what the regulations are. And I think you're going to be very surprised. This is what's called black letter law. It's in the penal code. So somebody can't say, well, you know, you're not supposed to do this or you're allowed to do that. And then you look it up in the actual penal code section and they're completely wrong. And unfortunately, this runs the gamut from lawyers to law enforcement people who don't spend a lot of time actually with their heads buried in the penal code looking at black letter law. So I thought we would go through a few of these sections very briefly with the section numbers. People can look it up on Google if they want to, or I can download this sheet that I pass out as a handout during the course.
Ooh, that'd be
and
handy.
We can put it on the website.
Cool.
Okay, so let me start out with people and concealed firearms. If you go to section 25400 of the penal code in the state of California, and this also is a question, believe it or not, on the firearm safety certificate quiz. So anybody that has purchased a firearm at any time in the last, 20 years, they've had to answer this question and they still don't know what the exemptions are. So we're going to go through that. But 25400 basically states that any person is guilty of carrying a concealed firearm if they carry it concealed upon their person, any pistol, revolver, or other firearm capable of being concealed upon the person. Now, what's very interesting is that if you are, for some reason, unfortunately, found to be carrying a loaded firearm that is registered to you, the first offense is merely a misdemeanor. The second offense becomes a felony. Now, what's interesting is that I have been teaching these courses now for probably a generation. I've been a licensed concealed carry permit holder since 1979. And as long as it's properly concealed, I can tell you right now, I have never been questioned. Not even once. So that becomes very interesting when you think about it. So 25400 defines what a concealed weapon happens to be and that you are guilty of violating Penal Code 25400. In fact, if you are caught carrying a loaded firearm. Now, what's also interesting is that if you are carrying a concealed firearm and it is not registered to you, first time, that becomes a felony. This is why when sheriffs in the 58 counties in California issued concealed carry permits to people, that permit has to identify on it the make, model, and serial number, and it must be registered to the permit holder. On the other hand, again, I go back to the fact that it's only a misdemeanor if you're caught the first time. But here are exemptions. If you go to Penal Code 25600, this is going to fascinate everybody, as it does every time I do the course. I deal with a lot of people, especially ex-girlfriends, ex-wives, who wind up with restraining orders against ex-boyfriends, ex-husbands, or stalkers. I've had two in the last 2 months who essentially had no experience in firearms, were not able to get a concealed carry permit in the county where they live because of lack of training and various other issues. But let me read to you what 25600 says. It says a violation of Section 25400, which is the concealed carry violation, a violation is justifiable when a person who possesses a firearm reasonably believes that person is in grave danger because of circumstances forming the basis of a current restraining order against another person who has been found to pose a threat to the life or safety of that person who possesses the firearm.
Hmm.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So
let's let that soak in for 5 seconds. We'll do a short celebration of free enterprise, come right back. And our guest today is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find all of this, including some really great PDFs that he's given to us to post, and also his website, FriedmanHandgunTraining.com. You can find that all on our site, too, at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Oh, hey, well, I guess that's the end of that.
That's the end of that, yeah. Okay. Peter, I have a question. When you say on a concealed carry permit, you have to list the guns you're carrying by serial number on that permit. Let's say husband and wife have the same guns on their each of their permits, but they're actually registered to one or the other. Is that a violation?
Yes, sir.
Oh, so they have to be registered to the person who's carrying them.
That is correct.
Oh, okay. Well, I know a friend who probably has to get
asking
that
for
fixed.
A friend.
Asking for a friend, yeah, I'll have to get that fixed.
But that's pretty weird because I know a lot of people, again, asking for a friend, Bill, who have the same, like husband and wife who have their same guns on each permit,
and they go and they clear the concealed carry background,
but the gun is only registered to one of them,
and they allow both of them to be on each other's permit. So is that's a violation?
Well, in fact, it is.
Okay,
because a gun can only be registered to one human being at a time.
Correct.
It cannot be registered to a husband and wife. It cannot be registered to a company unless it is a what's called a PPO or a patrol, company like an armed guard company.
Sure.
Where the company, in fact, has the firearms, and then the firearms are issued personally to the guards. And then under that circumstance, the guard's name is also on the company roster for that firearm.
Right.
But I doubt whether, the average person is ever going to encounter that. One of the other things, since you brought up the registration issue, which I find very interesting, is that I have run into a number of people who have inherited firearms from a father, from a grandfather, and they've not re-registered them in their name. Now, what happens here, unfortunately, in the state of California, let's say you have a firearm that your grandfather handed down to you. He's gone, and you get that firearm stolen. You're never going to get it back.
This is not registered
because,
to you.
Because it winds up in the law enforcement property building, and then you know, you go to reclaim it for some reason or another, and they look up the serial number and the registrant on that firearm, and you're not there. They're not going to give it to you. The other problem that you run into with registering firearms is that up until about, seven, 8 years ago, long guns, rifles and shotguns, were not required to be registered.
Correct.
Now, they are required now to be registered. So the problem is that if you have a rifle or a shotgun that was handed down to you through the family, and that gun gets stolen, or by accident you happen to leave it at the range, and I have had that happen, as a matter of fact, at one of my local ranges here, where some guy came up there and he had half a dozen different guns sitting on the bench, and then he went to leave, and he actually left one under a carpet mat, and then he came back to collect it, and we couldn't release it to him. And I was the chief range safety officer at the time. And I said, no. I said, you're going to have to prove that this is your gun. And he said, well, I brought the gun into the range. I said, no, that's not proof. And what I did was I contacted the sheriff's department, and a deputy came up and took the gun into his car, got in his little laptop computer, ran the serial number, and looked at the guy's driver's license and said, I can't release this gun to you. You're not the registered owner. And the guy actually, in fact, lost the gun.
Wow.
So there is, you know, there's stuff on both sides here.
Well, how
that you have to.
How would that work if you did have, say, a rifle or a shotgun that you'd had for 30 years? At the time you bought it, it was not required to be registered. It's never been registered to anybody. And it's stolen, you'll never get it back?
Well, hopefully you kept the record of sale. Because if you kept the actual receipt of the record of sale of that firearm to you, that is good enough to retrieve it.
Okay.
That makes sense. Okay, so just for the people who are not living in California with a K, is this pretty common through the 50 states, except for the places that actually recognize the Second Amendment as their concealed carry permit? Is this pretty common or more restrictive?
This is more restrictive.
Okay.
But then I'm going to go through the exemptions here,
okay,
which just surprise the heck out of people when they see them. So there's a bunch of exemptions, in fact, to Penal Code 25400, carrying a concealed firearm. And what I want to point out, though, right now about 25600 with a restraining order is it may not apply to a husband and wife who are estranged and they have a mutual restraining order against both of them. So it generally is going to apply by the one person who has a restraining order against the other person. Now, also, if you wind up with a restraining order against you, you are not allowed to be in possession of firearms. And it says that right in the preamble to the restraining order.
Well, you have to go turn them in. You've got to
turn them in.
Yeah, you have. If you have a restraining order, even if it hasn't gone to court yet, if it's a temporary restraining order, I know someone this happened to, vindictive neighbor, filed a restraining order, and this person has a lot of guns, hunts quite a bit, that kind of thing, had to take all their guns to a local gun shop and have them hold them. You can take them, I think, to the sheriff's office. There's multiple ways you can
or
do that.
Or transfer them to somebody else.
Yeah, but they have to be turned in, which was a huge hassle. And even on a temporary, I think I was told it was like $1,800 to go, get a lawyer, go to court, have to prove you didn't do what they said that you did. And so even though there was no, you know, it really was a non-issue, it was very expensive and a huge hassle.
Or you just wait till the restraining order expires. But generally, if it's a restraining order that involves
it was temporary.
Criminal intent, or something like that, and stalking, you're probably never going to get them back.
No, it was just a temporary filing. It wasn't the restraining order was never actually issued. It was a temporary filing, and they sent them the thing that said they had to take all their guns and give them to somebody else and on and on.
Well, it's just not the situation you want to find yourself in.
No.
Okay, so one other thing I just want to tell you is that don't make any mistake with 25600. It is not a permit of any kind. It is what is called an affirmative legal defense. So it's not a permit, okay? It's an affirmative defense so that when you get in front of the district attorney, you say, I was carrying this firearm because I have a restraining order against my ex-boyfriend who has smashed the windows of my car and sliced my tires and threatened me with grave bodily harm.
And it was going to take me three months to get my permit cleared through the sheriff's office.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, again, it's an affirmative defense. It's not a permit, okay, instead of actually getting a legitimate concealed carry permit. And then I get into situations where people, and we talk about the castle doctrine and what you can do in your own home. And I explain to them, well, like we talked about last week, the lady who had the barn, and she had horses in the barn, and she said, well, if somebody comes into my barn and I don't want them there, you know, can I use deadly force? And I said, no, unless they are a direct threat. So if they pick up a pitchfork and they start to come at you, that's a direct, imminent threat. Yes, you can protect yourself with deadly force. On the other hand, if they wander into the barn and they're just standing there, that is simple trespass.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need to do is call the police and tell them, hey, there's some moron standing here in my barn. Come get them, you know, and hopefully they will. The second warning that you give to a trespasser now constitutes criminal trespass, okay? It goes to the same effect if you go into a Starbucks. If you are a concealed firearm carrier and you walk into a Starbucks because Mr. Lewis, who owns Starbucks, decided he does not want firearms or uniformed police officers in Starbucks, if you go in there and they happen to see for some reason or they believe that you are carrying a firearm and they say, if you're carrying a firearm, you need to leave. Okay, that's the extent of it. It's a business. And you should leave. Because if they tell you the second time, now it becomes criminal trespass. Hmm. So businesses, private businesses, have the right and privileges of telling people they don't want firearms in there. Well, if the gun is properly concealed, who's going to know?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of a two-edged sword.
It always goes back to that. If the gun is properly and if it's not properly concealed, then you know, brandishing a weapon and all sorts, you have all sorts of other problems.
Exactly.
Your concealed carry license is the least of your worries.
It just blew away.
Yep,
that is correct.
Yep, that's the smallest problem. We used to have a guy, he used to come to the tea party, and he had, I think it was the gun from Johnny Dangerously, you know, the one that could shoot through schools. It just was like the biggest gun I've ever seen in my entire life. And he always had it in a holster, but he had a bit of a disability, and so his gait was off. When he walked, well, his shirt would always ride up, and so it was like, he kind of always looked like, I don't know, maybe it's because I just saw it yesterday, but like Yukon Cornelius on... on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Right.
It's like, hey, Yukon Cornelius, your giant gun is out on the outside of your shirt. But, you know, God love him. There were several hundred people there, and everybody was like, oh, it's just him. You know, everybody knows it was a giant gun. It was kind of funny, but, like, okay, out in public, you're in deep trouble,
Idaho,
bud.
Not California.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I'm sorry. We have to take another quick break. We'll be right back. And if you didn't know that Yukon Cornelius proudly carried an open carry 45, you should go back and watch that little flick there. There's a lot of good material in there that's really politically incorrect.
Yes, it is.
Every year I watch it, and every year there's more stuff that's politically incorrect. It's really awesome. So show that to your children and grandchildren. So you're listening to We the People. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire.
It's a lot of good stuff that used to be in our history and recent history.
Yeah.
We're going to endeavor to bring it all back. All right. So, Mr. Friedman, I think we've got a lot of us who need to run down to the sheriff's office and make some adjustments. How is it that they can issue us a concealed carry license, but they don't check the registered owner of the firearms we list?
No, they have to check the firearm that you're putting on a concealed permit.
Yeah, so how is it they just issued a permit last week with some firearms on that that are not
registered to the person on the permit?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, they're not really supposed to be doing that, and somebody screwed up, and if for some unknown reason you get stopped and you are the permit carrier and the firearm that you're carrying is not the one that's listed on your permit.
No, it's listed on the permit, but the registration is not mine.
Okay, well, all right, we're talking about two different things. Anybody who receives a concealed carry license, mm-hmm, or a concealed carry permit, CCW,
right,
in the state of California, per the Department of Justice in Sacramento, if you look at the actual form, the DOJ form has spaces for three firearms.
Yeah, here
by make, model, and serial number.
Right.
Now, what's interesting is I've got concealed carry permits for 38 states. And when I take a look at the other ones, that's not on there. All it says is concealed carry firearm. The one I have for Oregon states, I'm trying to remember now. Let me look. The one in Oregon just states concealed carry firearm. The one for Nevada says handgun, which in their definition is either a semi-automatic firearm or a revolver. California is very specific. They are very specific.
So if it's listed, maybe we just misunderstood this. If it's listed on your permit as a listed gun that you are licensed to carry, the gun doesn't necessarily have to be registered as it was purchased. Like if Bill buys a gun and I put it on my permit to carry, even though I'm not the registered owner, through the system, but it is on my permit, that's good.
Let's put it like this: that's a gray area, and you don't want to be the test case.
Oh, how unfortunate. Huh? Yeah. Interesting.
Well, definitely warrants a little bit of investigation for sure.
Mull that over. Yeah, we're up here. We're allowed to have five. five firearms on our permit.
Well, there's space. It's a standard DOJ permit. In Contra Costa County, for example, not only do you have to carry the DOJ permit, but Contra Costa County only allows two firearms on their issued card. So I've got a card with my name, address, and photograph on it.
Oh, wow.
And on the back, it lists what Contra Costa County has authorized me to carry.
Nice. And your district attorney doesn't.
Model and serial number.
And your district attorney has chosen not to prosecute looters if they actually needed the stuff they stole, so.
Let's not even get into
so
that.
Obviously, the priorities in Contra Costa County are like.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so let me move on here if I can. If you go to Penal Code 25605, it says that Section 25400, in other words, violation of carrying a concealed firearm without a permit, shall not apply to any citizen of the United States or legal resident over the age of 18 years. Any citizen of the United States or legal resident. I mean, somebody with a green card. Over the age of 18 years. Now, any citizen of the United States or legal resident over the age of 18 years who carries either openly or concealed anywhere within the citizen's or legal residence place of residence, in other words, their home, place of business, and this is the kicker, or on private property owned or lawfully possessed by the citizen or legal resident, any handgun. So in other words, if you have a 4-acre spread, and you're out there somewhere on your spread outside the home, and you are threatened by somebody who comes onto your property, even though it's not inside your home, you may lawfully defend yourself with a concealed firearm.
Mm.
Most people are not aware of that. Now, that's why during the course that I teach, I explain to people like the lady with the stable, there has to be an imminent threat, otherwise it's simple trespass. So in other words, if somebody, you're out there in the back 40, and somebody happens to come onto your property and they do not pose an imminent threat, they are guilty of simple trespass and you can't shoot them. But again, it also applies to a temporary residence, which can be an RV, or it can be a tent at a campsite, or while you are out hunting. Most people don't know that. That's part of a hunting license. If you have a current hunting license and you are out hunting, you may carry a concealed firearm.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of this stuff here that just gets by the wayside. And then I have other people who have come to me, a lot of elderly women, as a matter of fact, who live alone, and they come to me to get a permit to purchase a firearm. And Section B of 25605 says that no permit or license to purchase, own, possess, keep, or carry, either openly or concealed, shall be required of any citizen of the United States or legal resident over the age of 18 years. So it's not like Illinois or New Jersey or New York, where you actually have to get what's called an FOIA card to permit you to purchase a firearm. There is no requirement other than the firearm safety card quiz, which, and I've been issuing those for years, and I have never found anybody that's missed more than 7. You're allowed to miss 7 out of 30. You know, and if you've ever taken that test, I mean, you have to have an IQ of about 50 to fail it.
But you do have to do the background. You do have to do a federal background check, don't you?
Pass that.
Well, you have to go through the NICS system, yeah. Now, I tell you, since you brought that up, that's something very interesting. When you go and you register the firearm and you do the DROS, the dealer's report of sale on the computer, or you manually fill out the form, whichever it happens to be at the time, and you answer the 11 questions. Question number one, are you the actual purchaser? Is yes. The next 10 questions are all no, or they should be. And then that goes immediately into the national firearms system database, and the gun store will know within less than an hour whether you are a prohibited person. In California, the 10-day waiting period was put into law as a cooling-off period so that somebody who wants to get into or finalize an argument with somebody else can't walk into a gun store, buy a gun, an hour later go out and do damage with it.
Mm-hmm. But if they already own a bunch of other ones, it makes little to no sense that there's a 10-day waiting period. You have, like, you know, 6, 7, 10, 40 guns at home, and you're going to go buy another one, and you have to have a 10-day waiting period because you really just want to shoot them with that one?
For each one, you got to wait 10 days.
Yeah, it just seems totally stupid.
And if it's a retail sale, you can't buy more than one new gun never registered before, except every 30 days.
Yeah, again.
Now, you can buy all the used ones you want. You can walk into a gun store and you can buy 5 used guns right now, wait the 10 days, and then go pick up all 5 at the same time.
Oh, they just can't be brand new?
No, they cannot be brand new. Any firearm sold at retail, you got to wait 30 days before you can buy the next one.
I realize the people.
Let's take a really quick break.
Let's leave it as a cliffhanger, but we definitely need to know. And just in case people think we're stupid, we do realize the people who make these laws typically don't own firearms and know nothing about how they work. So sometimes that's evident in the rules.
There has to be, when you pick up the firearm, there has to be an affidavit that gets signed. That the person to whom you are releasing that firearm has demonstrated the proper safe handling of it, loading it, unloading it, disassembling it for cleaning, putting it back together. And there's an actual affidavit form that has to be signed by the person releasing the firearm and the person they are releasing the firearm to.
Hmm. So for all those people who think that everybody's just running out getting guns and just, there's no rules.
No, that's nonsense.
Yeah, that's nonsense. We hope this show stands in stark contrast to what you've always been told. And for those of you who own firearms, we're sorry that your head's exploding because this stuff's all super frustrating. But we will be back with our guest, Peter Friedman, always full of information. You can find all the info about the show and hit the PDFs that he has posted for us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Seems everything I buy these days has got a foreign name. From the kind of car I drive to my video game.
I got a Nikon camera, a Sony color TV.
But the one that I love is from the USA.
Boots and faded jeans, a homemade sandwich, a half a jug of tea. Average Joe, average pay, same old end, same old day. But there's nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer, kind of glue that sticks this world together. Hands of steel and cradle of the promised land. God bless the working man.
Exactly. Okay, so back to Bill's cliffhanger.
What was it?
It's your cliffhanger.
Well, we're talking about registration and things like that, but
yeah, what about
let me
the
move on.
Well, what about the supposed gun show loophole? To me, I don't know that there is one, but people are always saying, oh, I can go to a gun show and buy a gun and walk out with it.
That's absolutely untrue.
Correct. That's okay. I'm glad you said that, because that's what I've always...
Someplace else you might be able to.
Hmm?
In some other state that might be legal.
Well, it's definitely not in California, right. But for example, if you were to go to Idaho, and you could have two residents of Idaho, and one resident wants to sell a shotgun to the other resident, and they're both residents of Idaho, there is no background check required on the receiver of the firearm.
Hmm.
Okay.
But so, we're talking about California. That's also the same that is true in Arizona. There's a couple of other constitutional carry states. I'd like to just keep this within California.
Sure.
Okay, here's another one that's very interesting. This is also a question that's on the firearm safety card quiz, and it has to do with the transportation of firearms and concealable firearms in a vehicle. It's Penal Code 25610. 25610. And this is really interesting because it starts out section 25400, and that's a violation of the concealable carry law. Section 25400 shall not be construed to prohibit any citizen of the United States over the age of 18 years. Notice it does not say or legal resident. So in this particular case, it says section 25400 shall not be construed to prohibit any citizen of the United States over the age of 18 years from possessing, receiving, owning, or purchasing a firearm, from transporting or carrying any pistol, revolver, or other firearm capable of being concealed upon the person, provided that the following is complied with. Number one, the firearm is within a motor vehicle and it is locked in the vehicle's trunk or in a locked container in the vehicle. So if you look at the safety card quiz, the quiz question says, well, am I in compliance with 25400, for example, if I lock it in the glove box? And the answer is no, it's false. The firearm must be locked in a vehicle's trunk. That means a sedan with a lockable trunk, not a truck,
right?
Not an SUV, not a minivan.
Okay.
It's in the vehicle's trunk, which means that you can take the firearm and just put it in the trunk without it being a locked container of any kind, and you're legal, or in a locked container in the vehicle. Now, what's interesting is that this penal code does not say the material of the container. So if you go on your website to the Home Defense and Basic Handgun PowerPoint that I had you put up there, it will show you that you can actually have a concealable firearm in a soft side bag, providing you can lock the bag.
Mm.
Now, granted, somebody could take a razor blade and slice the bag open and take the gun.
Yeah, that seems kind of obvious.
But there is nothing, nowhere, except in the TSA regulations for transporting a firearm in an aircraft, is anything referred to as the container has to be metal, or it's got to be fiberglass, or it's got to be whatever.
Sure.
Now, this is a real problem.
Hey, Peter, before we run out of time, I have somebody on the line who has a question for one of the things that you just covered. We don't usually do a whole bunch of call-ins, but Patrick isn't a flake, so thought it was, not to demean the other people who might call, but at least we know he's not going to, you know, talk about flying saucers. So, Patrick, fire away.
Well, just a couple little minor tweaks to what the gentleman was saying. So, first, for buying handguns in the state of California, it's only one new handgun in a 30-day period. So it's not guns, it's a handgun in a 30-day period. Also, if we have used handguns, that still falls under the one in 30 days. It's treated just like a new handgun. Only a consignment would be exempt for the 1 in 30 days. So just a little bit of difference there. Uh-huh. Also, I'm a licensed gun show producer, and for any long guns from non-dealers inside the show, there is no 10-day waiting period for long guns over 50 years old. So that is kind of the loophole that they're talking about. But also, many other states have no waiting periods, and they're exempt from background checks in certain states. Here in California, for modern firearms, non-serial and relics, there's going to be a 10-day wait. So just a little bit of tweaking on some of that information is all.
Oh, okay. Well,
thanks for that.
That's good to know. I didn't know there was a 50-year deal.
Yeah,
50 years. And so every year, right now it's 1970, long guns, 1970 or older, sold by individuals, not dealers, but individuals, they can leave the show the same day. So that is a bit of a loophole.
Huh. All right. Huh. Well, thanks for that, Patrick.
And that first weekend of March.
And he's absolutely correct. I just didn't want to get too far into the weeds.
And then,
you know, because
and then hold on one second.
The
first, what did you say, first week of March?
First week of March, Reading Gun Show at the Holiday Inn. So hopefully if all goes well, we're going to have a great show first week of March.
Nice. Okay.
Great. Thanks
well,
for
thank
that.
You guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
And again, Patrick is absolutely correct. I just didn't want to dig too deep down into the weeds because this stuff is hard enough to understand in the first place. I have a Class 3 CNR license myself, and any firearm that is over 50 years old, manufactured over 50 years, I can walk into any gun store anywhere in the United States and with my Class 3 license, sign a copy of it, give it to them, and leave with the firearm. But he is also correct about the 30-day waiting period before you buy another gun. That applies to handguns, not long guns.
Perfect.
And as far as new and used, what's the thinking behind only one new every 30 days versus used?
But you could buy some consignment guns, not just used, consignment.
Okay. And he's also correct about the consignment, for example. If a gun dealer purchases a gun outright from somebody who walks into the store, that gun has to go into their inventory. And that gun now, because it's in their inventory, is subject to that 30-day period. If, on the other hand, I walk in and I say, I want to put this gun on consignment and then make a deal with the gun dealer, he's going to get a commission for
selling it, but he never owns
the sale
it.
And displaying the gun, you can buy as many consignment guns as you want.
Yeah, because it's being transferred. It's basically
a
transfer.
It's a paperwork issue.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting. So bottom line is if you're out there and people have told you that buying guns in California is just, you know, there's no controls on these things, you should probably have your tongue ripped out. So anyway, we'll be right back. Our guest is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. Today's December 13th. I forgot to do that at the beginning. I know sometimes we re-air this stuff and people want to know the context. So December 13th of 2020. We're almost done with 2020, which is noteworthy.
Soon enough.
I don't know of anybody's life that was improved by 2020. It was a huge pain for everyone on a multitude of levels. So anyway, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And our
sponsor.
And we have similar guns on our permits, just not to put too fine a point on it.
Let's just tell the whole world about that.
Yeah, well, that's a big deal there. Yeah,
it's a bigger deal for you, but not for me. But
yeah, damn it.
Yeah.
Go and buy the guns, and it just seems so handy. Let Bill go get it.
Yeah. That's a problem. Yeah, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. go up and see them. They have a, they're getting a good inventory of John Deere tractors just for the end of the year. Great Christmas gift. Or go go buy a new generator or steel power product. They've got it all in stock up there. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right off I-5. Or give them a call at 226-9226.
And they're actually open. You don't have to make an appointment.
No.
Or do a Zoom call.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you guys aren't doing Zoom sales
they,
yet.
They do have their occupancy rating on the door, though.
Oh, in case there's like a mob scene at the tractor shop?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh. Just please, people, stand back, take a number. but yeah, go up and see them or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
So we were kind of laughing during the break a little bit, in a, I guess, a mean-spirited sort of way. Imagine that coming out of us. But we were sort of chuckling that talking about the Second Amendment and the rules in California is probably not doing a great deal of business for, you know, like U-Haul. We were kind of happy they weren't a sponsor or anything. Not that we'd be opposed to that, U-Haul. If you'd like to jump on board, we could shade things your way.
Yeah, speaking of that, just to kind of give you an idea of what's happening in California, if you did want to, say, move to Texas, go down and grab a U-Haul, because California to Texas, a 20-foot or 21-foot U-Haul will run you about $5,500. Now, if you're fed up with Texas and you want to come back to California...
Or you live in Texas and you want to come visit relatives in California and you don't want to deal with the mask rules on the flights...
Yeah.
You could just drive a U-Haul back.
That's right. And that would only cost you $1,600 to bring a big truck back to California.
Obviously,
so
it's more...
A little bit of discrepancy
more
there.
Outgoing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe we are helping U-Haul.
Yeah, could be.
Because it is more going out. But
yeah.
Yeah, still, what a nightmare. And there are other states who have laws, obviously gun laws. Some are not as restrictive as California, as we have learned from our guest, Mr. Peter Friedman. But, you know, bottom line is if you still have friends who think, or family, who think that, you know, guns in California are just everywhere, everyone can get them, the only people who can do that are criminals. And they've always been able to get guns.
And
they will always have them.
And the way you can tell is...
tattoos on their neck?
No, when they open the trunk of their car to show you the guns, it's probably illegal.
That's right. If there are no rules and the car and the gun is being sold from the trunk, that's true.
Yeah.
And it's not in a locked case. Then you're probably into something hinky. So, Mr. Friedman, are we still on laws, or did we skip things in the home defense side of it that people need to know about?
Let me just tell you what happened to me this week, because
okay.
I live about 100 yards away from my local gun shop where I helped put them in business 10 years ago.
Nice.
And when I do the course for somebody, and then they go to pick up their firearm, and I go with them. I meet them over there at the gun shop, and to make sure that everything goes smoothly and they're complying with all the laws. Well, this week alone, I was over there 5 times. I was there with a guy with a truck, two minivans, and two SUVs. And in all of these 5 instances, they were about to transport the firearm that they had just purchased and putting it in their car and then going back home illegally.
Oops.
And here is why. Because when you go to 25610 and it says the firearm is within a motor vehicle and it's locked in the vehicle's trunk, and in these 5 cases, the vehicle did not have a trunk or a locked container within the vehicle. Now, the problem arises here when you buy a Glock or you buy a Taurus or you buy a Smith & Wesson. They do not come in lockable boxes. In the case of the Smith and the Taurus, they're in cardboard cartons, which, of course, you can't lock. In the case of the Glock, they're in a hard plastic case, but there is no way to lock that case. SIG, on the other hand, does provide you with a plastic case that is, in fact, lockable. So if you take this section and you go back to 25400, you have 5 concealable firearms sitting here now in unlocked containers that are not actually sequestered in somebody's sedan, trunk. And so what we had to do in each one of these cases was, in the case of the Glock, for example, they all come with a cable lock that uses a key. So we had to take the cable lock out of the box and then wrap the cable lock around the handle, the carrying handle for the case, and lock it that way so that they would be legal to get this firearm home. In the case of the Taurus and the Smith & Wesson, the Shield, which are not in lockable cases or not even in hard plastic cases, now they were required to go and buy a soft side bag, and you put a small TSA or luggage lock on the zipper of the bag in order to legally transport the firearm.
So they can't transport them with the cable lock that comes with them. That doesn't count. It has to be in a thing.
I'm reading right here in the penal code.
Just a
firearm is locked in the vehicle's trunk or in a locked container in the vehicle.
So for the people who've been using a cable lock.
So you can't take the cable lock in the case of a revolver, swing the cylinder out, put the cable lock through one of the chambers. That's not in a locked container.
Which in,
even though the gun isn't usable,
when,
and it's technically
when
locked,
compared to a soft side case, it's much more locked than in a soft side case. But that's not the law. So
again,
not
making
not
the law.
Not what the penal code says.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's another case of lawmakers not being familiar with guns, making the rules.
Well, now here's the other one. Let's say you do, in fact, have the firearm. Let me rephrase this. Let's say that you do not have it in a locked container, and you have an SUV and you throw it in the back, and like a Taurus snub-nosed revolver, it's sitting there in a cardboard box. You're now going to be in violation of Penal Code 25612, which says that a person shall, when leaving a handgun in an unattended vehicle, secure the handgun in the vehicle pursuant to Section 25140. So in other words, on the way home from the gun shop, you stop at Safeway to go pick up a few items for dinner, and the gun now gets stolen out of the back of the car, or you get stopped for some reason after you leave Safeway, and here is this thing sitting in the back of the SUV, and the police officer says, why isn't this gun in a locked container? So what happens in California now, especially since that San Francisco thing with Kate Steinle,
right,
where the illegal grabbed the gun out of the
park ranger's
officer's vehicle, and then shot Kate Steinle down there on the Embarcadero, the law has since been changed as of January 1st, 2017, that it has to be in a locked container. If you have a permit, it can remain loaded. But if you do not have a permit, then it should be in a locked container, unloaded, and out of plain sight so that somebody looking through the window can't see the thing sitting there.
That makes
sense. So what if you go to the home defense and basic handgun PowerPoint, about a quarter of the way through there, we talk about soft side bags being locked. And then there's the next slide shows a metal gun vault, which you can buy on Amazon for $20 now. You don't have to spend a lot of money, with a three-digit combo. And it's got a cable in it that's about 3 feet long. And in our cars, we have now installed these boxes in there with the cable, so that the box cannot be removed from the vehicle. But if I were to stop and pick up my grandkids, I have to take the gun, put it in the box, make sure that it's properly locked before I go into the school to pick up the grandkids.
And I think the cable is a great idea, because just being in a locked box isn't going to stop it from being stolen, where the cable is going to make it just a little bit more difficult to get it out of the car.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Exactly.
All right. We've got to take a really quick break here, at the first part of the hour. It always sneaks up on us fast. Our guest is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Smuggling guns and arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud. The ghost moon sails among the clouds. Turns the rifles into silver on the border.
Don't buy guns there either.
No.
That's another hot tip. All right, back to you, Mr. Friedman. I'm done screwing around. Well, maybe not. I'll just take a break. How's that?
No problem.
All right. So where do we go from here?
Okay. Everybody right now is heading to their local range to practice, providing that they're open. And there is actually a penal code section on that, which is 25635. And it says that Section 25400, which is the violation of the concealed carry, does not apply to any member of a club or organization for the purpose of practicing shooting upon established, and that's a key word, established target ranges, whether public or private, while the members are using pistols, revolvers, or other firearms capable of being concealed upon the person, or transporting these firearms unloaded, again, as previously stated, in a locked container or in the trunk of a sedan, when going to and from the range. So I have a number of people that I work with doing concealed carry training here in the county, and it's necessary to explain to them this penal code section. All right, going to and from the range, and it has to be on an established range if you are going to practice concealed carry. Now, there's a whole lot of ranges. In fact, I've seen most of them that say that you can't carry a loaded firearm onto the range. If you're a permit holder, you have to unload the gun before you come onto the range. But then there are times when we do hold sanctioned, if you will, or scheduled CCW training so that you are allowed at that point undergoing training to carry concealed and practice carrying concealed, wearing a coat or an ankle holster or whatever it happens to be. But when you go to that range and you return home from that range, the gun once again has to be unloaded and in a locked container or in the trunk of your car. So, okay, then this gets, okay, we good?
Yep,
we're good.
Yep.
Okay, then we go to the next one, which is Penal Code 25640. And everybody really is fascinated by this one. Section 25400 does not apply to licensed hunters or fishermen, and that means with a current license, not an expired license. Licensed hunters or fishermen carrying pistols, revolvers, or other firearms capable of being concealed while engaged in hunting or fishing, or transporting those firearms unloaded when going to or returning from the hunting or fishing expedition. So if you've got a hunting license and you're out there in the woods and you are legally hunting with a current license, you may, in fact, carry a concealed firearm. Now, as soon as you get back to your car, you have to unload it, put it in the locked container, or put it in the trunk of the car if it's a sedan, and then move on from there. But while you are actually stalking through the woods, excuse me, you can carry a concealed firearm for your own protection. Excuse me. It's some of this stuff is really, really interesting, and people, you know, don't do the research.
Now, if you have a hunting license, you still cannot conceal carry to and from your hunt.
No.
Okay.
So, in other words, it's got to be in a locked container, unloaded. Pardon me. Got to be in a locked container, unloaded, until you get to where you park your car, grab your rifle, grab your shotgun, and now you can load that handgun and conceal carry it while you are in the process of hunting or fishing.
Okay.
Lots of ways to get tripped up.
Oh, that's why it's really important, if you're going to own a firearm and you are going to transport it or carry it somewhere, like in your RV or in a tent at a campsite, other than just going to a range to go target shoot, you really got to be familiar with some of this stuff. And what's fascinating is that I've been through two sheriff's academies in my lifetime, and none of this was ever discussed during that time.
Well, I think too, in California, in the last, let's say 15 years, gun laws have been, let's say, very fluid. I mean, they have made so many changes, and laws have come in to be overthrown in the courts, to be reinstated on appeal. And I mean, it's very confusing. So it is very important that if you're going to own a firearm, particularly a handgun, do some homework.
This is absolutely true, especially now with the provisions that are currently in effect with high capacity magazines. An interesting thing is that the Glock 19, for example, the standard magazine is 15 rounds. In California, you can't buy a Glock 19 that has a magazine over 10 rounds.
But you can own one, a 15
round. Okay, here's the kicker. Here's the kicker, Penal Code 12276. What it says today is that possession of a high-capacity magazine, meaning any magazine over 10 rounds, is not controlled. However, what is controlled is the buying, importation, building of from spare parts, lending, selling. You can't do that.
Right.
So, essentially, when I run into people, and today there is a moratorium in effect by Judge Benitez, from the Ninth Circuit, who put a moratorium on the prohibition of what are called standard magazines for the firearm, not necessarily just for California. But, for example, if you have a Glock 19 that you purchased, let's say, outside of California, you brought it into California, and it has the standard magazine of 15 rounds, you possess it. Okay, but you didn't get it by somebody who lent it to you. Essentially, you didn't purchase it in California. And what I tell people who have older magazines and stuff, I found it up at the range in the trash. Possession is not controlled.
Right.
Only buying, lending, manufacturing, stuff like that. I always caution people, if you're going to the range, for example, with a Glock 19, take the 10-round magazine. Don't take the 15-round magazine if you have one, because the ATF very frequently has agents that, let's say, observe. And you can basically tell them because they're the only ones not shooting.
Right. But if you have it in your possession, what can they do?
Well, you don't want to be the test case
right.
where somebody comes up to you and says, how did you acquire that?
Yeah,
you got to be careful.
You might be within your rights, but defending it's going to cost you a lot of money.
It's going to cost you a lot of money. You got to come up with a lawyer, you know, and it's just, you know, don't do it.
Don't be confrontational. Just
don't. Exactly. How do you win a confrontation? By avoiding a confrontation.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, you know, I tell everybody I know
because,
who goes
you know,
to the range with an AR-15, don't take the 30-round magazine with you. You know, you can do just as well with the 10-round magazine.
Well, even going to the range at all with your AR-15 nowadays is questionable unless you've, I believe you have to have that registered as an assault rifle in California now, don't you?
No. As a matter of fact, if it had any one of the six evil features on it, such as a grenade launcher or a suppressor, a collapsible stock, a vertical pistol grip, forward grip, or a pistol grip on the thing. There were these six evil features.
Oh, being a black gun isn't evil.
July 1st of 2018. If you were not going to remove those evil features, that was the last date by which you had to register it as an assault weapon with the state of California DOJ Bureau of Firearms. So very simply, all you got to do is modify them. I have modified hundreds of these things for people, making them California compliant. So you can either put a fixed stock on the gun, or you can take the collapsible stock and put a pop rivet in there, pinning it so that it won't collapse. You take off the flash hider on the front of the barrel, and for $20, you can put on what's called a muzzle brake. You take off the pistol grip. You put on a pistol grip that's got a fin on the back of it so you can't put your thumb around the grip. Just stupid. Just bat stupid, if you understand my expression.
Mm-hmm.
I have several Mini-14s, Ruger Mini-14s, using the same cartridge. Same cartridge as the AR, except it just looks like a regular rifle.
Wow.
Now, if I were to take my Mini-14 and I were to put a stock on there with a pistol grip, that now becomes a evil feature, and now I have just committed a felony.
God. I mean, really? And the people that they're, you know, they make these laws for people who don't know them, for starters, don't care about them, don't follow them, and I mean, the only people that get jammed on this stuff are regular people like all of us and probably people listening to the show. We're the guys
correct.
Who get jammed. So, you know, it's funny. I used to have this conversation with my mom. I'm like, Ma, they don't make laws for criminals because criminals are criminals because they don't follow them. So these laws, the only people that they ruin their lives are just regular people who might, you know, like shooting guns and maybe you don't like it, but they don't intend to ever shoot anyone.
No, inadvertently become a felon.
Woo.
Right.
It sneezed there. We have to take a really quick break here. We'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sometimes I want to light up underneath the no smoking sign. Sometimes I wish they'd tell me how justice got so blind. I wish they'd just leave me alone, cause I'm doing alright. You can take your change on down the road and leave me here with mine. Cause that ain't my America, that ain't this country's roots. You wanna slam old Uncle Sam, but I ain't. Still bleed red, white, and blue. Well, they ain't us.
school. I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time.
Yeah, got to go back to school on all of this for sure. Besides taking classes and that sort of thing, I know that you have quite a bit on your website for people to follow, FriedmanHandgunTraining.com. And I know that that would be useful for folks, for people who kind of want to primer on this, or maybe I don't know how to say that. Is there like a cheat sheet available?
The Ten Commandments?
Something.
Well,
or should we just buy all our guns at your house and have you walk us down to the store? I mean, that actually seemed like the fastest way to do it.
I'm going to email this handout to you.
Okay.
That I just put together with these penal code sections on it. And it'll be up on your website, and then I'll put it up on my website as well. One of the things that Bill mentioned here was registering of assault weapons. And this is kind of a little interesting subject, too, that is also nuanced. If you decided that you did not want to take the evil features off of your AR-15 by July 1st of 2018, and you, in fact, did register it as an assault weapon under that law, then that has to be, when you transport it, in a locked container. Now, any other long gun, rifle or shotgun, only the law says has to be cased. So, in other words, you can't have it like in Nevada or Idaho in the back of your truck window, you know, in a gun rack. So if it is a long gun and it's not a registered assault weapon, all it says is it has to be cased. That means in the original cardboard box that it was shipped in, or in a soft side carry case, something like that, so that somebody looking in the car can see or can't see that, in fact, it's a firearm. On the other hand, in the case of a registered assault weapon under that law, the case now has to be a hard case, and it has to be locked, unloaded, just like a concealable handgun.
Hmm.
Okay, now here's another little nuance with the ARs, and I just got rid of my last one. I don't even want to be in the system with one. And right now they're going for a lot of money. So if you bought one 10 years ago and you paid about $400 for it, you can get $1,400 for it today.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it's worthwhile getting rid of them because God only knows what's going to happen, especially in the state of California. However, if you registered that gun as of July 1st, 2018, as an assault weapon, and you paid the additional tax on it, and now you're in that system as having this particular firearm in your possession, and now you take the evil features off the gun, and now you send a picture of the gun. There's a whole thing with the California DOJ and how to do this. And then you take the evil features off, you send a picture of the gun, and there's a special form on the DOJ Bureau of Firearms website that you have to fill out. And what you're doing is you are de-assault weaponizing this firearm. And you're turning it back into a California-compliant rifle. The problem with that in the state of California is that you can never put those evil features back on the gun. Because what you're doing now is you're re-registering the gun as a simple rifle, not as an assault weapon. So the problem now would be if you decided, to hell with California, I'm going to put a pistol grip back on my AR-15, and you get caught with it, having deregistered it, you're now a felon.
If you move to a different state and changed it, could you do that?
If you move to a different state, you're home free.
Okay.
I'm talking about California.
If you stay here, yeah.
Once
you don't spend the $5,500 on the U-Haul.
Yeah, once you deregister that firearm as an assault weapon and make it California compliant, you can never go back to putting evil features on the thing because July 1st, 2018 already has come and gone.
Now let me ask you this, Peter, if you have a AR-15, you elected not to register it. It was my understanding that as long as you had the barrel removed from the rifle and it was in storage, that's legal.
Okay. Since you brought that up, let me tell you what that law is. Under the, when you go to 12276, it states that for definition purposes, it is no longer a firearm if you have separated the upper from the lower. So as long as you don't put the upper and the lower together and it has evil features, okay, you're okay.
Right.
So I got people that I know who are clients of mine who regularly go to Reno and back. And up in Reno, they have, you know, which is part of America, they have an AR-15 with evil features on it. And what they do is they disassemble, they pull with two pins, they disassemble the upper from the lower, and they put them in separate containers in the car. Because under Penal Code 12276, if the rifle, in fact, is disassembled, it no longer meets the definition of a firearm.
Well, if it's disassembled, why do you have to put it in a hard case?
Well, you don't unless it's assembled.
Right.
And it was registered in the state of California.
Right. Okay.
So as long as the upper and the lower are separate components, they become parts. And they do not meet the definition under the assault weapon requirement as being a firearm. Because it can't do anything.
Correct. Yeah, I just know, I know a lot of people that did not register because they didn't want that gun in the system as an assault rifle. And they store them disassembled.
Precisely, and you're perfectly legal doing that.
Okay. All right.
That's because it doesn't meet the definition of a firearm under the Penal Code. It's not a firearm. You've broken it into parts. You know, but who knows what California may do now?
Yeah. See, that's always the wild card, isn't it?
That's always the wild card, and you never want to become the test case.
It's kind of funny, though. The wild card we never consider is that California regains sanity and all these laws get repealed. That's never actually one of the considerations, which kind of tells you.
Well, we had a shot at it, though, with the Ninth Circuit getting turned around a little bit. You know, I think a lot of people thought maybe we won't be quite so stringent on a lot of this stuff. So I don't know. We'll wait and see.
They're still afraid, though. But they're busy being afraid of the virus, so maybe the virus is good.
Mm.
Maybe if they're more afraid of the virus than they are of firearms, they'll stop making gun laws.
Yeah, could be.
Well, we're killing more people with the virus than we've ever done in any year.
Yeah. Well, I just always challenge people, please look up the statistics on the seasonal flu and how many people that's killed, because every year that kills tons of people. But, you know, for the last winter and this winter, it hasn't killed anybody.
No.
Crazy.
No. Regular flus.
You know something even crazier?
Okay.
Here's Trump, who got COVID. You got Charles Grassley, who got COVID. You had Rudy, who got COVID. Have you heard of any Democrat lawmakers with COVID? Name one.
I think, didn't...
Anyone?
Didn't Uncle Joe get it?
No, Uncle Joe wore 17 masks.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
No, he wore 17 masks.
Yeah, he broke his foot, though.
He broke his foot. I like the little meme that came out that said that how will we know if the vaccines are working? Will the survival rate go from 99.5% to 99.7%?
That's right.
I was like, ouh, strikes a little close to home there.
Well,
like the latest thing going around, why are we investing in vaccines that are only 90 to 94% effective when the recovery rate is 99.8%?
That's an excellent point. I think you need to send me that in meme form so I can forward that out.
I will do that.
I'm going to require that in meme form. Oh, my gosh. We have to take one last quick break before we get to the top of the hour here with our guest, Peter Friedman. That's our momentary screwing around. When we come back, we'll do actual, you know, hard work here on firearms. Be right back.
I can't do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone.
Ah, yes. Very upside down. All right, what have we missed in our last 10 minutes, Aaron, here?
Aaron, I just sent you by email to your email that cheat sheet on the penal code.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'll post it right now. Right this minute. So we have 10 minutes left. What have we missed besides tons of stuff?
I don't know. We've gone through a whole lot.
We have.
Any other hot home defense things? Because I have to say, I shared the idea of using the red nightlights so as not to disrupt your night vision, and no one said, hey, I've heard that before.
And the cell phone tip was another one I got some feedback on. People didn't know that a deactivated cell phone still works for 911.
Excellent. Yeah, everybody is... usually very surprised at that. What else? Again, I think we talked about landscaping around the house. Make sure that there's no, you know, shrubbery that somebody can hide behind near the garage door or near the front door. You know, one of the things that we didn't talk about that occurred to me was when you come home at night, especially since it gets dark so early now,
mm-hmm.
When you come into your neighborhood, turn on your bright lights and just, you know, light up the neighborhood. You'd be surprised what'll, you know, jump out of a bush or take off on a run. And if you can, learn to back your car into the garage. I think once before I told you the story when we were doing the FBI and the gun in the toilet thing about the neighbor across the street from me. A nice little old lady, and she, during the summer, it was like 95 degrees outside, and she had a side yard, you know, just full of trash and shrubbery and whatever, and a couple of guys in an old pickup truck came down the street with a sign on the side that said, "We haul junk." She flagged them down, and she brought them in, and put them in the side yard. They cleaned the whole side yard out, and God bless her heart, she invited them into the kitchen for some lemonade.
Oh, boy.
Well, about a day or two later, I came home. It was after dark. It was about 8 o'clock at night, and I noticed that her garage door was up. Now, I've been in this house for 25 years. She has never left the garage door up. The car was gone. It was gone. She had a little gold Honda SUV in there. And so I took my big mag light and walked across the street and lit up the garage. And there's the door that leads into the house from the garage. And I want to go into that for a minute for home defense. The door that led from the garage into the house that comes almost directly into the kitchen.
So I'm at that door. It was on a Thursday evening, and I'm knocking on the door to see whether she's home or what. And I hear this, you know, muffled yelling from inside, and I open the door, and there she is, duct taped to a kitchen chair.
Yikes.
Oh, boy.
Well, what happened was these guys obviously came back. They knew that they could scan the code for the garage door. They knew that the garage door was not locked on the inside going into the house, because she would pull into the garage, shut the door, and then she would get out of the car and go in the house. So these two guys came back. They ransacked the place. They duct taped her to the kitchen chair. Ultimately, the cops found her car about six blocks away, parked by the side of the road. So what I tell people is, look, first of all, don't allow strangers into your home. I don't care.
Ever.
You want to give them lemonade, take it out to them. Don't let them walk through your house and see what you've got there. Second thing, learn to come into your neighborhood with the bright lights on a little bit slowly. Don't assume this is that situational awareness thing we talked about, red, yellow, and green. So just, you know, take a look around before you actually pull into the driveway. No funny trucks should be parked across the street in your neighbor's driveway when you know they're out of town. And it says TV repair or something on the side of the van, because the bad guys do that all the time. And learn to back your car into the garage if you can, because that way, if you back your car into your garage, and you can go to Home Depot, you can go to Lowe's, Ace Hardware, you can buy bumpers, and they're self-adhesive to the garage floor. So back the car in so that you don't back it up into something, and the garage door is going to close. Put those bumpers under the rear wheels at that point. Back your car in. When you go into the garage, that gives you a clear field of vision outside of the house. Nobody can come slipping in there, you know, as you're closing the door or anything. And if somebody decides to slip in, what do? You hit the gas.
Mm-hmm.
After you put it in drive.
Okay. on your garage door, you have the clicker, right? The remote control.
Yeah.
There are three what are called DIP switches. And you can rotate those DIP switches if you open up the remote as though you're going to replace the battery in it. And there are three little wheels from 0 to 9. Okay? Make sure that you change those DIP switches every now and then, every few months, maybe every quarter, but at least every 6 months. But make sure that whatever you set up in the remote as your code, you have to go to the motor inside the garage, which has the identical DIP switches,
right,
and make sure that those codes are the same, otherwise the door won't open. The other thing I strongly recommend you do is to put a deadbolt lock in the garage door that leads into the house. Don't leave it open. You can key it to your house key. It's very simple.
Yep.
Okay, Home Depot will be happy to do that for you.
You know, the other thing, too, before you leave the garage door opener, I don't know, it seems like most people don't notice this, but on the button on the wall when you go into the house, one of the choices is lock. And if you hold down, you hold down that lock button, and then the light on the big blob that you push to open the garage door flashes, just as a constant flashing, and no one can use a garage door opener, regardless of how it's set up,
good for you,
to get into your garage. So if you do that at night, even somebody who's driving around the neighborhood who, you know, gets lucky and gets your code, they can't open your garage door.
We were this was years ago. We were walking around the neighborhood with the dog, and we stopped a few blocks away. We stopped and we're talking to some folks, and I had our garage door opener in my pocket, and I didn't realize it, but I was just, you know, fiddling with it, pushing the button. I noticed the guy's next door neighbor's door would go up, and then a few minutes later it would go down,
and it's like, what
then
are they
go
doing?
Back up, and we're like, what the heck are they doing? And then it dawned on me, like, I was doing
it. Crap, we're doing it. Everybody was keyed to the factory
settings.
Well,
a lot of people, don't change those factory settings.
But that lock thing at night, it takes a little, you have to kind of get used to it because at the beginning, what you do is you go out, you open your door, you get in your car, you back out, you push the button and it won't close because you've locked the code. You have to run back in, push and hold the lock button until the flashing stops, and then, you have to practice. You just got to pay attention. But it's a way more secure garage door situation than we typically have, and it's something easy to do, and all garage doors have it.
Well, you got to remember that all of these garage doors have three dip switches, which gives you a probable combination of 999.
Yeah.
So you keep working at it, but they have scanners. You used to be able to get these scanners at Radio Shack because it's all wireless, and if you can pick up that frequency, you can open garage doors. So, yeah, this is true.
Oh, yeah, because that was kind of a big thing for a while, as people would drive around the neighborhood pressing the button until they saw somebody's door open, and now they have access to your house.
Used to be a game. It's not a game anymore. But definitely put a deadbolt in.
Yes.
Put a deadbolt in on that door that leads into the house from the garage.
Yeah, and use it. I mean, people think like, oh, the garage door's shut. We're fine. But, same rules as last week apply. Somebody walks into your house because you left the door unlocked. Guess what? You get to argue that in court. Thank you so much for being with us. I think we're like in our last like 30 seconds or so. So we always cut people off unceremoniously. Thank you so much for coming on with us. And I wanted to let people know our guest has been Peter Friedman. His website is friedmanhandguntraining.com. He's got a lot of information. We did a show with him last week specifically about home defense. I think you'll like it. There's a lot of good info on the website. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. And thank you, Mr. Friedman.
My pleasure always.
Have a great rest of the weekend.
Somewhere, baby. Somehow I know.